FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's May 2nd, 2018. Well, in times of market uncertainty, trade wars, rising interest rates, and all sorts of things, rising debt levels, what is an investor? What is a person to do? Well, before we get into that, as always, best part of my day is getting your email in my inbox in the morning. For you to participate, be part of the show. It's just the best part of the day. So kl@kerrylutz.com is the email address. And when they're noteworthy enough, we even read them on the air. So question is, where do we go? What about work? What is work? What should work be? What does work mean to you? Well, to help address a lot of those questions, noted author, columnist, Forbes columnist, John Tamney is back with us now. John, welcome back.
Hey, Kerry, thanks for having me.
Hey, so you're about to release a new book. We'll get into that very shortly. But first, just as far as what's happening with markets, trade wars, your contention is it's going to hit us worse than the Chinese? You really think so?
I think that almost by definition, it hits each country equally bad. I just think it needs to be stressed that if people think the U.S. can emerge from this unscathed, assuming we take it in the direction that we're going, they're very naive. Let's not forget that the most valuable company in the world is Apple. Apple is based in the United States. The best-selling Apple product by far is the iPhone. 20% of the iPhone sales take place in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and mainland China. If we put up barriers to the Chinese being able to sell in the United States, we are by definition going to limit the ability of U.S. companies to sell in China. And this will do a major damage to our best, most prosperous companies that already have the highest penetration in China.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, maybe the Chinese could put off what they're doing, pull it off, stealing our intellectual property, you know, keeping out our products, et cetera, higher duties. But I think the straw that broke the garbage carrier's back was last year when China said, hey, we're not going to take your recyclables. Effectively, the U.S.'s third or fifth largest export to China is garbage, scrap metal, waste, paper, plastic. And all of a sudden, China says, no, we're not taking it anymore. It's like a $5 billion a year market, John. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to take that?
I think that a couple of things that you said require a response. We keep Chinese, or the Chinese keep U.S. products out. Oh, that interests me because the most successful Chinese smartphone maker is Huawei. They're unable to sell in the United States. In fact, they tried to do a deal with AT&T, and AT&T was kind of quietly told, if you do that, your ability to merge with Time Warner will be limited. Intellectual property theft. How very interesting there, because Steve Jobs is the greatest entrepreneur, arguably, in modern times. As he freely acknowledged, he was one of the greatest thieves of intellectual property in history. He and Bill Gates joked about a company that you're familiar with, Xerox. They both essentially saw each other at Xerox Park as they were lifting ideas that Xerox couldn't execute on. So this notion that the Chinese keep out American products is so untrue. Let's not Cadillac, number four luxury car seller in all of China. Apple gets 20% of its iPhone sales in China. Is this protectionism?
Well, hold it though.
Do you want to talk about Starbucks? There are double the number of Starbucks in Shanghai alone relative to New York City. You're saying the Chinese are keeping out American products, and even if they are, What would that, what difference would that make?
But look, like you give the example of Cadillac, but all those Cadillacs have to be manufactured in China because they got that 25% duty on cars exported to China. So
good.
Do you think any
iPhones are manufactured in the United States? That's why Apple's such a rich country. It allows poor countries like China to manufacture while it designs them. Since have you gone protectionist since we last spoke?
Well, no, but
what difference does it make?
Look,
where China has the potential to be the largest market in the world. Doesn't it make sense for a lot of companies to manufacture them there, just as a lot of Japanese and German companies have factories here in the United States where they manufacture? What difference does it make? Furthermore, what business is it of yours? Do you realize that since the 1980, U.S. businesses have invested $250 billion in China? Do you know something that they don't know? Are they stupid? Are they putting their intellectual capital at risk in
some
ways that
are.
You and Donald Trump know about but they don't know about?
Well,
are you and Trump the experts?
No, we know that in a large number of cases, John, you can't deny this, when an American company wants to open a factory in China, develop a new product, whatever, they have to divulge all of their IP to their local partner that they didn't want in the first place, but that they're forced to have. So it's not
exactly. And
they're
exactly obviously willing to do that, as evidenced by the $250 billion invested by U.S. companies. They ultimately see that as a good deal. What business is it of yours?
Well,
are you a shareholder in these companies?
No.
Did you and Donald Trump discover something that these companies didn't know? Because isn't it interesting that the stock markets were doing just fine before President Trump started going after China? They didn't seem too worried about this thievery that I'd never heard you talk about until Trump was elected president.
No. For years, been discussing that.
Okay, so again,
been a concern.
So you knew something that businesses don't know. I'm skeptical about that. It's not a knock on you, but I mean,
hey,
we're talking about a lot of. Do you know something that Apple doesn't know? Why would Apple invest so much, manufacture so much in China if its IP was at risk of being taken away?
Good question. But, you know, it is a legitimate issue to some extent. You know,
is it a legitimate issue for the government? Do you think that Donald Trump is your guy to fix? Or do you think maybe this is something that businesses should work out for themselves?
Yeah, well, the problem is that China is a mercantilistic economy, just like John in the
you mean
1800s.
Oh, so the Ex-Im Bank in the United States, that's not evidence of mercantilism.
Hey, I'm
in
not
the
saying
US.
We're perfect either.
Persistent devaluation of the U.S. dollar is an example of U.S. mercantilism. How about the bailouts of car makers and banks in 2008? That wasn't an example of mercantilism. What is mercantilist about China? Anything that they've learned is stuff they've learned from the United States. Furthermore, what difference does it make? If the Chinese want to subsidize our consumption, what business is that of yours?
Well, the problem is when you build like an Oakland Bay Bridge and you import all your steel from China, and they arguably, there's no proof, I will admit it, but there's an argument to be made that they deliberately shipped substandard goods. Granted, the San Francisco Bay Bridge Authority, whatever it is, accepted that product without investigating it further, but now we got a bridge that's falling apart. Is that an act of war?
I don't think so. Why on earth would the Chinese want to harm what is their biggest market?
Because it's,
I mean, do you really honestly think that the Chinese are trying that in trading with us, in feverishly working to serve our needs, that that's an act of war? I mean, is that a serious belief of yours?
I think that, look, you could say it's a coincidence that the steel was just substandard and no big deal, or you could look at it and there's more nefarious motivations at work here. I have no proof. I just think it's an interesting coincidence.
You don't have any proof, but do you think, just as a reasonable human being, that the Chinese are this steel example that you don't have any proof on?
I admit
that's evidence that the Chinese are trying to war against us, that rather than trying to meet our needs, they want to weaken us. And please tell me how it weakens someone to have people who were once poor trying to get rich by serving their needs. Did you prefer the China in which the average annual income per capita was $175, or do you prefer the one of today? I'm just curious. Were they? I suppose in your mind they were less of an enemy when they were the poorest country.
You know, it's probably no difference, but you have to keep your friends close and your enemies closer, and you know, you got to suspect everybody's motivation. But the fact is here.
But why do you want to empower government to do that? I'm confused.
I'm not a big government person, but government's primary responsibility protect us from enemies outside and within. Within and without.
Enemy combatants.
Potential.
Chinese trying to invade us. The U.S. spends more than the next eight countries combined on military. Is this an act of war when the Chinese are trying to meet our needs? I want to see where in the Constitution the government is empowered to go after countries. And remember, countries don't produce goods and services. People do.
Of course.
I want to meet this. I want to see where in the Constitution. Can you point out where they say if people in countries are feverishly working to serve our needs and sometimes subsidizing our consumption, that this requires the federal government, the Trump administration, these geniuses about economics to get involved?
Yeah, well, we know in government that the cure is often worse than the disease. And
by definition.
I'm not saying that this is the proper way to handle it. And I don't believe that there is ever going to be a trade war. But, you know, it would be much better if all currencies floated freely and all goods and services floated freely. But we don't have a world where that happens. And unfortunately, you know and I know that anytime government intervenes, regardless what the government, they're just going to make the situation worse. So really, the solution is an opening up all over rather than a closing off or attempted. And maybe that's Trump's end goal here. We don't really know.
Also, but freely floating currencies, what does that have to do with this? I'm confused.
It has a lot to do.
I'm an Adam Smith kind of person. I think the sole use of money is to facilitate exchange.
Yes.
I think what the Chinese do is perfectly reasonable. The dollar is the world's currency. Why wouldn't you do as dozens of other countries do and peg your currency to the dollar to facilitate exchange? Do you view currencies as another act of war? What's your solution there? What are the Chinese doing that bothers you on the currency front?
Oh, I think that the currency should float freely because that will, you know, under the theory of fiat currencies, they were supposed to float freely against one another to some extent. And when there was too big an increase.
So you think floating money is a good thing?
I think floating rates, absolutely, because that's the market determining the worth of any particular currency.
Okay, right? So and you're not alone. A lot of people think that we shouldn't have a stable currency like we used to.
I believe we should be backed by something so that we don't have to go through these machinations.
Well, so if we're backed by something, it's not going to be a floating currency. That was the point of the gold standard,
right?
That the dollar would have a consistent definition. Assuming
exactly.
The dollar were on the gold standard, do you think it's bad if the Chinese peg to the dollar so that they can be on a gold standard, or is that something that
here's the problem. You know, you and I are both students of money and economics. We're never going to see, at least probably in my lifetime.
That's not the point. That wasn't the question I asked. Assuming, let's go back to 1971, would it be a bad thing if the Chinese pegged the dollar? Would you be okay then?
Well, if it's backed by gold and really backed, an honest system,
okay,
but that's just not, we never had it, we never will. Bretton Woods.
It's not the Chinese fault that the U.S. has forfeited its leadership role in terms of currency. But what's
Absolutely.
Bad about pegging your, I mean, again,
well, the peg.
Maybe you complain all the time about the dozens and dozens of countries around the world that peg their currencies to the euro or the dollar.
Panama really upsets me. Panama, I stay up nights worrying about Panama's peg. No, it's just it creates dislocations, disruptions.
Panama doesn't bother you, and Ecuador doesn't bother you, but China.
I don't
because they're doing such a good job of meeting our needs. You think it's a problem, or
No, I think it's an issue because the system's flawed and they're really exploiting a wide open fault in a flawed system.
Who's harmed by this exploitation? What do you think? Too many Chinese goods come into the United States?
No, I think we are harmed by it because it
how?
The U.S.
How
being,
does it harm us?
Here, the U.S. being a... possessing the reserve currency, able to just pump out prodigious quantities, unbacked currency, and the world having to accept it enables really bad behavior to take place in our domestic economy. In
yeah, but
our,
you're changing the subject.
No, but that's
we were talking
what
about,
it's about
China.
But it's
how
also
does it hurt the U.S. that the Chinese peg their currency to the dollar to facilitate more exchange with the American people?
Well, because the rates effectively, and believe me, I'm not saying China's got a monopoly on this. It's a manipulated rate. It's not a result of the free market.
Who manipulates
maybe,
the weight?
Yeah, well, the Chinese by...
No, they don't, because they're pegged to the dollar.
Yeah,
the Chinese have no monetary policy. Their currency is pegged to the dollar, as lots of currencies around the world are. Why are you blaming the Chinese? They did not invent this system.
Hey, but they certainly mastered it and have exploited it. Anyway.
What do you mean they've mastered it? They have no monetary policy.
Well,
their
they do have a monetary policy.
Is the dollar. They
exactly.
are paid to the dollar.
Exactly.
Their
key
policy is the U.S. Treasury's policy.
And
they have none of their own.
Oh, they have a policy, which is to follow the dollar at all costs, whatever it takes.
Which means
keep
that their
the
monetary policy is the U.S. Treasury's policy.
Effectively, yeah. Effectively, it
okay,
is.
So,
but
and dozens of countries around the world do this, yet you have a problem with the Chinese. So explain to me, what is it bad? Why is it bad that the Chinese do? Tell me, why is it bad what the Chinese do that, you know, countries around the world do? I'm confused because I keep getting the subject changed.
Into, the Chinese.
Allegedly, the U.S.
No, they're manipulating
because of this.
They're manipulating our system against us, obviously. And
how?
They're perpetuating, you know, the false currency. As long as they go along with it, everything's fine. And it's causing large, you know, deficits, which maybe are good, maybe are bad.
How is it causing large deficits?
Because their yuan should be 30% higher against the dollar.
Oh, so you know that. You
know I don't
that
know.
The Chinese
I don't
are a nation of 2 billion people, and you understand, sitting from the U.S., what the value of their currency should be.
I have,
how do you know that?
I have no idea.
To know something.
I have absolutely no idea.
That you say
but I'm saying
30% higher.
Nobody
but
knows.
Just
I'm just saying hypothetically.
30% higher.
John, hypothetically, if it's 30% higher, maybe it'll be 10% lower, but let the currencies float.
What difference would it make? If it's 30% higher, what does that change?
If it's 30% higher, that means that iPhone just went up a lot in cost, and Apple has to effectively make decisions where they're going to manufacture it. Maybe it goes to Malaysia. Maybe it goes to Vietnam. I don't know the answer,
What difference would that make?
But look,
I don't think that's true, but what difference would it make?
Well, it makes a difference.
How are the American people harmed? I'm hearing that they're harmed by this.
Well,
that Apple does as lots of successful companies do. You know, Nike manufactures more shoes mm-hmm. in China. Do you have a problem with that too? Is that something that you'd like to, you know, give Phil?
I don't believe in micromanaging trade. Okay, I'm not in favor of tariffs.
That's what you're saying.
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is
you're saying that you know what the proper price
see,
of the currency is.
I have no idea. I don't pretend to know that. All I say is the current monetary system was created with the expectation that currencies around the world would float freely against one another, and that would resolve trade issues and economic issues, both internal and external. But that system isn't functioning, and I'm not blaming the Chinese for it. Hey, look, they're entitled to take advantage. But John, we can
what are they taking advantage of? I'm curious. Once again, who are they taking? How are the American people hurt by this?
Well, by declining manufacturing jobs here. Arguably, a lot of ways.
Really?
But hey, hold it.
And so you think because the yuan, you presume because you know currencies that the yuan is artificially weak and that's enabling more Chinese exports to the United States?
I would say I can't say for sure because, like I said before, I don't know. Just like I don't know what the interest rate should be.
How do you explain Japan? In 1971, a dollar bought 360 yen. By 1985, it bought 200 yen. Why did Japanese exports to the U.S. rise so much, even though the yen crushed the dollar? That kind of calls into question your theory, doesn't it?
It's a good question for which, I don't know the answer to, but I'd rather see the rates float than have them fixed, whether it's Panama or Costa Rica or any other country. Better off to have them float to know what the true relative values are rather than to fix them, which eventually does cause dislocations and issues both for the U.S. and the country doing it, whether it is Panama.
What are the issues?
Well, so
it was bad during the era when currencies had a stable value?
I think that's preferable. I'd much rather see currencies have a stable value, but you can't have a stable value when they're all fiat-based currencies. Then it's strictly relative value to one another.
Since they're fiat, you want even more chaos.
I want to see them float because when you it's just like when you fix the price of an apartment in New York City, John, and then you can't believe it when it's below the market value, and then you have a shortage, or when it's above the market value, and then you have a surplus. You can't understand that. It's the same thing with currencies. But look, we're here to talk about your book, The End of Work.
Well, according to you, we're running out of jobs because the Chinese are
I didn't say that. Well, come on.
You claim that the yuan is undervalued, and that's just killing
manufacturers.
Who cares that we've got the most valuable companies in the world precisely because we interact with the rest of the world? I guess you want more of a closed system. My book.
You're putting words in my mouth.
That free trade among people and not managed trade of the kind that you want just allows people to specialize. And when people specialize, their odds of doing work that's most commensurate with their skills rises. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just making the case. I imagine you would disagree with it wholeheartedly that this engagement with the rest of the world has been beautiful because it's freed up more and more people in the U.S. to pursue the kind of work that elevates their unique skills. Thus, they're not working because they're doing something that they love.
Yeah, and then they're out there collecting food stamps and entitlements and putting pressure on that way. But look, I'm totally in favor.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Hold on.
That's why the U.S. attracts the most investment in the world because, they're on food stamps. So,
record numbers, right?
You can't deny it. Yeah. The country that has the 10 most valuable companies in the world that attracts more investment than any country in the world. According to you, all the workers are on food stamps, which is interesting because it raises the question, what must the rest of the world be doing since they're all so much poorer than we are? I mean, what kind of food stamps are they are since we're so poor?
No, they don't have food stamps, but look at where those valuable companies come from, John. They come from San Francisco, and it's awash in homeless people, used hypodermic needles, and people nodding out on the subways and on the streets. But look, I'm all in favor.
So if you were poor, would you go to Jackson, Mississippi, or San Francisco? I'm curious.
Well, it would depend on who had the better welfare system, I guess, if I wasn't ready to work. Don't think that economic choice isn't made when they give people in Houston a bus ticket to go come to New York City or places where the welfare pastures are much greener.
Yeah. Well, no.
True or not? True or false?
There's no doubt it happens, but you have to understand that poor people have always gone to the places where people are richest. It's the best place
and
to be poor. There's a reason that the world's poorest risk their lives getting to the United States and don't risk their lives trying to get to Honduras. It's kind of basic. It's not about welfare. It's about that's where the opportunity is greatest. Now, do some people try to take advantage of this and just put their hands out? Of course they do. But I'm sorry that you have such a negative view of the United States. I just don't share it. I can't imagine being so lucky as to live in this country and to talk about it so negatively as you do. But well, we plainly don't agree.
I think we've followed a lot of policies over the years that have tarnished the economic system, the political system, our right to speak out, all of that. And look, getting back to your book, hey, I'm one of those people who is pursuing a passion, talking to you now, doing Financial Survival Network, that probably would be unavailable in most other countries in the world. So I'm not knocking the U.S. I'm not negative. I just want to see the country, you know, be where it was, be the beacon of light again. You can't deny that these companies, these wonderful 10 largest companies, most of them being in internet and digital media, are at the very forefront, the vanguard of suppressing free speech.
I wholly disagree. I work for a company called FreedomWorks that without Facebook, it would be much more difficult for us to get our ideas of free markets out there. I don't understand
for now
where these ideas come from with you. And I will just add that these awful San Francisco companies that you can't stand have made it possible for you to do things like the Financial Survival Network.
Absolutely. Hey, it's a mixed bag.
This world that you imagine, this U.S. of the past that you think was so great, not that it wasn't. It was always great. It's always been a beacon for people trying to better themselves, but I'm sure you want to put up barriers to them too. But to say that these San Francisco companies have gotten rich by suppressing people is just so divorced from reality. And I think you know that's true. How do people get rich in this country? They get rich by commoditizing, by democratizing access to things formerly unavailable. I remember this great country from the past. I remember looking at someone in Beverly Hills in the 1980s who had a phone, a brick-sized phone, and I thought, my goodness, wow, this person must be a movie producer. Now you can walk into the poorest neighborhoods in the United States and you see people with phones that fit in a pocket that would have been supercomputers in the 1980s calling in phones. But those are those San Francisco kind of Northern California companies that you say suppress speech and just kind of beat up on the little guy. Yeah, they got rich meeting the needs of the little guy.
I agree where they came from.
Okay, you agree.
I agree where they came from, not where they're going.
How awful they are.
John, you can't
suppress speech.
They do. You can't deny that YouTube has had a war on conservatives.
For an entity that would have a much more difficult time getting its ideas out there without Facebook and Google and everything. You come up with all sorts of fallacies and ideas.
No, this isn't a fallacy.
These are true.
This isn't a fallacy. They're manipulating the algorithms on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google to suppress thought and beliefs that they're not supportive of. Anyway, we've kind of reached the...
Well, there's your business opportunity, isn't there?
Let's set it up.
You know,
anyway.
But since and especially since these guys are so corrupt and they're so manipulative, there's your opportunity to take
I've been
Google
thinking about
business,
it seriously.
All these San Francisco companies and everything. So
seriously considering.
I'll say that I know a billionaire when you do it.
Yeah, well, let's do it. So anyway, John, when's your book due out?
It comes out on Monday. So
Monday?
Fingers crossed. Very optimistic book titled The End of Work.
That doesn't mean
the end of jobs. It just means more and more people are being freed up in this growing economy to do what they love for a job.
And when you do what you love, like the old cliche goes, you never work a day in your life. And that
is
kind of what it's about. So we got to run now. If we want to follow your work, we just go to Forbes.com. Is that the best place to track you down?
You can go there. You can go there to Real Clear Markets is another option. So I'm all over the place. You can follow me on Twitter, but thank you very much for having me on. It's
always
good to have these discussions. It's good to disagree.
Disagree.
This is how we learn.
Disagree.
Both of our arguments will be enhanced.
Respectfully disagree.
So this is good.
Right?
That's right.
That is the difference between two people on the right having a disagreement. I am on the right for sure, but I'm more a libertarian. And two people.
I'm starting to wonder.
I'm a libertarian. You know I'm a
libertarian. You're not a libertarian.
I've been to Freedom Fest
you
for 7 years.
To step in and manage
trade. No.
Come on, that's not libertarian.
You're putting words in my mouth, but seriously, when people libertarians disagree. It's a whole different thing than when lefties disagree or a leftist disagrees with somebody on the right and it devolves into a shouting match. You know, we both talked facts. And I think that was really a healthy exchange because, you know, our core beliefs are very similar. Maybe we have different attitudes towards money and the government, but our actual core beliefs very close to one another. And perhaps I played a little more of the devil's advocate than I intended to, but I want to get that book when it comes out. So it's going to be on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever fine books used to be sold.
That's right. Buy several copies, and even from Amazon, even though they're suppressing me.
If they're not suppressing you now, John, what you're saying is so subversive. Eventually, they will suppress you. Hey, questions for John. I know you're going to have some. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz. And the evil Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, it's always a pleasure having you on, man.
Thanks for having me on, Kerry.
Enjoy the debate. You take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.